zone Chicago, or 10 o'clock if you're in the Eastern, time zone in New York City. And the program is podcasted as well on lvrocks.com. Thank you very much, everybody, for podcasting the program. And those four or five of us in the chat room, thank you. And the everybody listening live, the producers, the Centurion in charge, Consoler, thank you very much. And the program is archived over on SpankWagon.net. SpankWagon's on every Friday night from 7 o'clock Pacific time until 9 o'clock Pacific time here in LVRocks.com, followed by King Hesh. And tonight, after the news to me and the news to you, will be Chip from PoliticalSports.com.
With our, there's
the Centurion. Better late than never.
There you go.
And then after Chip, after Chip will be our new segment at the top of the second hour, be Trench, not Trench from Spankwagon, but Trench from, he runs the trenchcoat.com, among other sites, mycrimespace.com, and some other sites, newsofdoom.com. He's going to be on with the crime segment. We're going to talk about some crimes that are linked to the popular MySpace website, so we'll delve into that. And then ending the program will be Koenig Rules with our science fiction Battlestar Galactica Doctor Who update. And I did listen to that commercial, wherever the hell it was, that Sean and Chase did about about my program. And then I said about I hate Bush and I hate the president too. And something about colon. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. I don't know. Leave my colon out of this, please. So anyway, and then we'll move on to the news to me. Actually, today in the paper, in the USA Today, was a article in here about the government spending. This is the GOP-controlled United States government. How it's the fastest rise in federal spending since FDR. So the federal spending has skyrocketed under the GOP-controlled United States government. And actually, under the most recent, with the Bush, it's gone up 2.4% annual. Average annual budget change as a percentage of U.S. gross domestic product during these administrations. So Bush's has gone up 2.4%. Clinton went down 1.8%. So, I mean, as I said, we got to go back to this split government. Let the GOP Republicans run the Senate. Let the Democrats take over the House. And then we'll have a split government and a more compromise and things like that. I just think we have to go back to that. As I keep harping on that, when Clinton was in and Gingrich was the Speaker of the House, the spending rose, obviously, according to this percentage, rose at the slowest pace in the government's history. Was when Clinton was in the president and Gingrich ran the House, and then also, you know, the GOP ran the Senate as well. So I said we need to go back there. As much as I'm a Democrat, I'd like to see him gain just one House of Congress, you know? And then also we had the, what else is in this paper? The immigration business is still brewing. And then now they say May 1st, there's going to be a mass work stoppage by all the, supposedly all the Mexicans here across the country. I know in Vegas, it'll cripple the city. I mean, they had protests the other day, what Friday and Saturday was, down by the New York Hotel and Casino on that corner. And then a lot of kids stormed out of school. And what did the school district do? Well, they sent the buses, school buses down there to pick those kids up. Hell, let them walk home. And they got there on their own. They could get back home on their own. So, I mean, what are we doing? You know, how much money did that cost on all those buses down there to pick them up? So, but and really, is this federal fastest rise in federal spending? And the article says the federal government is currently spending 20.8 cents of every $1 the economy generates, up from 18.5 cents in 2001. So that's tells you everything that's going on. And also, they have some homeowners struggle to keep up with adjustable rates. And we're talking about Barry Bonds and, you know, his steroids gate. And so anyway, I'll move on to the news to me. This one's from today, about Tom DeLay, the hammer on Hardball. Of course, he's won his party's nomination for his reelection in Texas, but now he's not going to stand for reelection, so now he's going to step down. Now that's going to force a whole new primary probably in Texas for his spot, so the taxpayers have got to foot the bill for that. Tom DeLay was on Hardball with Chris Matthews saying he did nothing wrong, and he said that Clinton broke the law, and yet Bush did not. So I don't know. And then Monday, Fox News interrupted they had a Fox News alert, which interrupted a Fox News alert. They're talking to a couple who lost their home house in a tornado in the Midwest. So they interrupted that to show President Bush. You know, they had to show him live throughout the first pitch for baseball in Cincinnati. I mean, that just boggled the mind. Tom DeLay says he will not seek re-election. And that broke in when Zacharias Moussaoui is found eligible for the death penalty. That was Monday. And Sunday, Mexican President Vicente Fox said on CNN Late Edition that his government is working to improve prosperity in Mexico, and Mexico works every day to make the border secure. And that's, I think it's by sending them all over here to the United States. You know, if there's no way left in Mexico, the border would be secure. We'd nobody left to come over here. Pope Benedict the 16th honored Pope John Paul II on the first anniversary of his death. And what else we had there? On Saturday, protests continue about the illegal immigration problem. General Wesley Clark was on Weekend Edition with Tony Snow. He brought up an idea for an opposition government. The Democrats or whoever's not in power in the White House would have an opposition government to voice what the Democrats would do with a de facto Secretary of State and so on. I thought that kind of made some good sense. They have a separate cabinet. You know, this is what the Democrats would do to oppose, you know economic advisors. Had a Democratic economic advisor saying what they would do if they are in power. So interesting. I thought that's kind of a good idea. And also I was happened to trip over the Surreal Life on VH1, and then Florence Henderson is the counselor for the house. They call her Dr. Flo on that show, and they added former WWE wrestler Maven to the house. And the house mates also include Sherman Helmsley from the Jeffersons, Tony Katayan, and Alexis Arquette of the Arquette family, who is a transgender.
And CeCe DeVille.
CeCe DeVille, but transgender Alexis Arquette. That kind of buckled the mind. In there with Florence.
Have you watched it?
Yeah, with Florence Henderson there, and that Playboy Bunny, whatever the hell her name was. She's pretty hot, but I mean, mix it with Alexis
Arquette. There's a, well, who?
Alexis Arquette. That's from David Arquette's brother. I don't know, whatever. He's going to be his sister.
He still has a penis.
Yeah, he said a fairly large one, too. I don't know.
But who's the hot? Who's
I
the,
need a transplant. Maybe he could send
who's
this
the
to
hot
me.
Blonde in that?
Who?
There's another blonde. Short blonde. She's got a...
Charlene Tilton? No, I don't know.
Maybe. whoever's in there. I don't know. There's another short blondie.
Yeah.
That's
you sure not mixing that with Alexis Arquette?
No. I think you can tell who the dude is.
Yeah, at least he's got to do something with his voice. He's still got the male voice there going for him.
Hi. How's it going?
Florence Henderson, her eyes just bulge out right when she walked in that house. I don't think they told her what she was walking into, but oh well. And then Friday we had Condoleezza Rice admits thousands of errors in Iraq. No kidding. She was in Blackburn, England, visiting. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice accepted on Friday that the United States had probably made thousands of errors in Iraq, but defended the overall strategy of removing Saddam Hussein. Local Muslims and anti-war activists told Rice to go home when British counterpart Jack Straw earlier led her on a tour of his hometown of Blackburn, blah, blah, blah. So, and then Thursday we had a USA Today poll, who would do a better job in Iraq? Republicans 40%, Democrats 48%. Do Democrats have a clear plan for Iraq? Yes, 25%, no, 68%. Who would do a better job dealing with terrorism? GOP 55%, Democrats, this was from July, Democrats 29%. Now GOP 45%, Democrats 41%. And also Thursday was the 25th anniversary of the assassination attempt against President Reagan by John Hinckley. And also in Bahrain, a ferry sunk. At least last count I saw was 48 bodies were found. And then Jill Carroll was released by her captors in Iraq. So good for her. And then Wednesday we had this Democrats gain edge in party identification during the last year. Few Americans identify as Republicans, more as independents. Americans are about as likely to identify as Republicans as they are Democrats, according to a new review of a recent Gallup polls. So, and well, see, House Budget Committee was talking about the 07 budget and how the war in Iraq is not budgeted until after September of 07, and how they're going to take over $1 trillion out of the Social Security Trust Fund over the next 5 years to shore up the budget. So I thought that was interesting. I guess after September of next year, the war is over. I don't know, but they haven't budgeted for the war until September of 07. And Jack Abramoff was sentenced to 5 years and 10 months in prison for his role in the influence peddling in Washington. So with that, move on to the news to you. There you go. And the John is in the chat room. Welcome to John. I don't know. And this first one is from today, from the White House to send Congress nuke storage legislation. This is interesting to everybody who lives in Nevada. The Bush administration will send Congress on Wednesday a legislative proposal designed to hasten the opening of the Yucca Mountain nuclear waste storage site in Nevada. U.S. Energy Secretary Sam Bodman said. Bodman said the proposed legislation will speed the process of opening the Yucca Mountain repository and make it even more valuable national assets once it is up and running. So this has been going on for years here. They've been fighting this and fighting this and fighting this. Now it looks like Bush is going to, they call it Screw Nevada. So, like, you know, the whole state is bending over for the Bush administration. He's going to give it to the state hard and swift, I guess. I don't know. The contentious storage site is designed to hold thousands of tons of spent fuel and other radioactive waste now at nuclear power plants across the country. So the bill we are sending Congress represents a serious effort on our part to remove a number of legal and regulatory barriers that we believe stand in the way of making timely progress toward blah, blah, blah. So basically, the nuclear waste is on its way. And this is also from today from Michigan, from Superior Township. Dog decapitation shock Michigan town. And at first, the piles of skinned animals, mostly foxes and coyotes, turned up on the edges of dirt roads in a semi-rural community outside of Ann Arbor. Oh, there's the poor dogs. Though gruesome, they look a little more than the work of a sloppy trapper. Uh-oh, hope we're not killing any poodles. more the work of a sloppy trapper too lazy to properly dispose of the carcasses. Things took a more shocking turn on March 16th when what appeared to be someone's pet was found along with more skinned coyotes. The Rottweiler had been decapitated and its feet were bound with duct tape. Since then, 8 more dead dogs, including 3 without heads, have been discovered by residents and investigators with the Humane Society of Huron Valley. The mysterious dog deaths now being investigated separately from the wild animal carcasses have rattled this picturesque county and township. Blah blah blah. So this one lady, her name is Kim Hart. She fears her dog Duke. Her 2-year-old Rhodesian Ridgeback mix, I never heard of a dog like that, may have fallen victim to the dog killer or killers. He has been missing since February 16th. So, amazing. Sickening, huh? That's like we drive along the road and all of a sudden see a decapitated dog's carcass laying around the side of the road. I mean, yeah. But hopefully they'll find out. Where do these people come from, I wonder? I have no idea. You know, just taking dogs out of yards and killing them and cutting off their heads and tying up their feet like they're pigs. Ah. And on Tuesday, also from today, United States says 9 more soldiers were killed in Iraq. 9 more American troops died in Iraq, the U.S. military report on Monday.
Any other suggestions?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Garrison.
Could we get rid of all the Mexicans?
That's what some of them want to do in the house. 5 of them, 5 soldiers, 5 of them in a vehicle accident in a remote, rain-soaked western area. Their deaths brought the number of service members killed so far this month to 13, nearly half the number who died in all of March. 3 more Americans, 2 Marines and a sailor, were missing in the Sunday accident in which a truck overturned near the Assad air base. All the dead were Marines, the statement added. It gave no reason for the accident, possibly a result of a hostile fire. And what else? Heavy rains, blah, blah, blah. 31 U.S. troops died in Iraq in March, the lowest monthly death toll for U.S. forces since February 2004. I think that's because all the commanders are telling the troops to stay in their barracks and not go out into the civil war that's raging in Iraq. But the relatively good news quickly became worse on the first day of April when 4 troops were killed, including 2 pilots who died when their Apache helicopter crashed. Al Jazeera Television aired footage Monday provided by the insurgents, which they claimed showed parts of the wreckage. The Associated Press count showed at least 375 Iraqi civilians killed in December, 608 in January, and 741 in February. Most of the increase appeared a result of sharp rise in number of civilians found dead throughout Baghdad. Apparent victims of sectarian reprisal killing. So it's only apparent that that's going on. Apparent is the nose on your face. This is from China. Senior China official urges cut in U.S. debt holding. Because you all know, China holds the most highest percentage of our debt, and they're actually financing our country from going on. They're the ones responsible for keeping our interest rates down and everything else. If they stop buying our debt, we're in a whole lot of trouble. China should trim its holdings of U.S. debt, a senior Chinese official said, rattling markets on Tuesday in the run-up to a visit by the president to Washington this month. As China is a leading financier of the U.S. current account deficit and holds the world's largest foreign exchange reserves, the comments from Chang Sui, the vice chief of the National Parliament, sent the dollar and the U.S. government bonds lower. So I say we got to get the house in order here. Stop with this debt. You know what I mean? You know, spending $1 trillion in Iraq, some of that money could have been plowed into the debt and the deficit. Oh no, it's all right. Let our children take care of it. Tom DeLay, he says we have had an effect on the culture of D.C. Yeah, a culture of crime, ripoffs, and influence peddling, maybe. House Speaker Hastert, sorry to see the most effective majority leader go, he said. Scott McClellan, you know, part of the Three Stooges in the White House, DeLay has been a good ally to Bush. Representative Boehner, he's the one who's passing out checks from the tobacco interest on the floor of the Congress. Don't forget him. He has served our country with integrity and honor. All right. I seem to remember seeing a mugshot with him. And I'm honored to call him my colleague and friend. GOP Rep. DeLay, a strict adherent to the Republican principles. DeLay to Pat Robertson, I fasted for spiritual help in making my decision. So, amazing. Oh, man, good to see that clown go, you know what I mean? This is from Monday. Barbecue meats linked with prostate cancer. A compound formed when meat is charred at high temperatures, as in barbecue, encourages the growth of prostate cancer in rats, researchers report on Sunday. Their study, represented a meeting of the American Association for Cancer Research, may help explain the link between eating meat and a higher risk of prostate cancer. It also fits in with other studies suggesting that cooking meat until it chars might cause cancer. Wow, that was amazing. No more barbecued meat for me. I don't know about the rest of you, but...
Holy cow!
And then we had this from another story from Iraq. Iraq war, storm relief tops $100 billion. Measure boosts Bush requests.
Holy cow!
Absolutely. Measure boosts Bush requests for $4.2 billion in block grants, mostly for Louisiana. And Monday, this is from Washington, the price tag, good riddance, Tommy. Absolutely, the John, absolutely. The price tag for must-pass legislation to pay for the war in Iraq and additional hurricane relief is expected to pass $100 billion after action by a Senate panel on Tuesday.
Oh my gosh. Does that suck?
Absolutely. The bill generally grants King George his $72 billion request for military operations, intelligence gathering, and foreign aid related to the ongoing Iraq and Afghanistan missions, which would boost his $19 billion request for hurricane relief by $4.6 billion. Around here, blah, 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 blah. Spend the money. You know, we got, you know, crank up those machines at the mint. Bush is spending more money in Iraq. While our roads are falling apart and everything else. I remember, who was it? Rahm Emanuel, I think, wanted a bill passed when this war was just starting up that for every dollar we spent on Iraq, we should spend that same dollar on the United States. So if we spend, like, you know, $1 trillion in Iraq, we should spend $1 trillion on things here in the United States, like schools and roads and all that. Imagine how much better off we would be if this money that he was spending would have been spent on things here in this country. It would have been an amazing difference, you know? But anyway, and also Bush wants to spend $2 billion to fix the levees in Louisiana, but it's only to pre-Katrina levels. Nothing about making them higher, you know, because like I said, all the glaciers are melting in the poles and everything else, so the water level is rising. You think common sense would say, oh, we got to build these levees higher so that the damn water doesn't fly over them again. Oh, no, we're just going to rebuild them where they were before the hurricane. You know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Talk about, what was it, referring to the Bush misreads as a jackass. That might be right. The hurricane season is looming. It contains $2 billion to repair and rebuild levees and other flood control projects.
Next question.
So, blah, blah, next blah,
question.
Blah, blah. Yeah.
Next question.
And this next one is officer accused of assaulting young girls. Officer resigns position after arrest. This is from Shippensburg, Pennsylvania.
You are one pathetic loser.
There you go. Swatara police arrested Michael Fernsler, 33, on Friday night while he was on the job as a police officer with Shippensburg University. Police said he sexually assaulted 2 4-year-old girls in their Swatara Township Pacific home. Disgusting bastard.
Oh,
yeah. Investigations.
Oh,
Investigators said that Frenzler was a friend of the girl's family. Oh, yeah, a real good friend.
You
huh?
are a meathead.
And he was a foster parent, as well as the fact he was a clown who did children's activities as a clown. Seemed as though he positioned himself to be around children. That's really concerning. No kidding. Disgusting. That's what's saying to John Wayne Gacy. He was
it's time to abort your whole friggin' species.
Yeah, he was a clown, too. I remember when I was a kid, he was. I had to admit, we had him at some birthday parties I was at. I had no idea he was a damn mass murderer until they arrested him. And this is from York, Pennsylvania. We're staying in Pennsylvania. A man accused of stealing from cemetery. A York County man has been charged with stealing bronze flower vases from the Prospect Hill Cemetery last month in North York. Police arrested Carl Cameron. Some of the vases were recovered at a salvage yard in York. Prospect Hill Cemetery has had its share of trouble over the last few months.
What the shit is that?
In January, vandals destroyed and damaged more than 400 gravestones. So, man, you can't even rest in peace in that town with some clown stealing stuff from your grave. This is from the Fortune 500. Exxon dethrones Walmart on Fortune 500 list. Skyrocketing energy prices propelled ExxonMobil to the top of the 2006 Fortune 500 list and consigned poor Walmart to the number two spot in the magazine's annual ranking of the nation's largest publicly traded companies. I remember they did a thing on Jimmy Kimmel last night where they had supposedly the chairman of Exxon, you know, talking about their number one in Forbes 500. Some guy came behind with a barrel of oil and dumped over his head like they do for the coaches in the college games with the Gatorade. So I thought that was pretty funny. And what else we have here? Walmart, where are we here?
To my underground lair.
What's his name? Dr. Evil? There you go. ExxonMobil appeared number one in 2001. Only Walmart, Exxon, and General Motors have topped the list since its inception in 1954. Wow. Walmart had 315.654 only billion in revenue, a 9% increase from last year. Oil producers also rose in the rankings. Where are we here? Actually, ExxonMobil had $340 billion in revenue, a 25% increase over 2004, and had $36.1 billion in profits, the most by any U.S. company in history. Amazing. Amazing. General Motors, of course, is slipping in the slide. GM barely retained its hold in the number three spot, while Ford slipped to fix or repair daily, of course.
Let this be a reminder to you all that this organization will not tolerate failure.
Wow. Ford slipped to fifth from fourth, blah, blah. General Electric, of course, owns NBC and MSNBC and everything else. They slipped two rungs to number seven. And Citicorp and American International Group, blah, blah. And IBM was in there as held on to the last spot and to number 10, the 10th spot in the Forbes 500 by revenues of $91 billion last year. And this is from Sunday. U.S. plans to build Iraq clinics falters. And where are the clinics here in the United States? You know what I'm saying? A reconstruction contract for building 142 primary health centers across Iraq is running out of money. After 2 years and roughly $200 million, with no more than 20 clinics now expected to be completed, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers said. Spend this money. The company that they awarded, called a construction giant called Parsons, they awarded this contract to them in the early days of reconstruction and was expected to lay the foundation of a modern healthcare system for Iraq, putting quality. By the end of 2006, the $18.4 billion that Washington has allocated for Iraq's reconstruction runs out. There's a typo in here. Major projects this summer, the Army Corps of Engineers says, should noticeably improve electricity and other basic services, which have fallen below pre-war levels, despite the billions of dollars that we have pumped into that country. So, like I said, the power keeps flickering on and off. They don't have clean water, so still a big mess. We got to get out of there and pull the troops back to the border. Let those damn Iraqis destroy one another while we just take care of the borders and guard those oil fields, you know? Monday, JetBlue adds spa amenities on red-eye flights. JetBlue Airways Corporation will offer spa products on its red-eye flights, hoping to fill seats in fiercely competitive transcontinental markets as high fuel prices continue to plague the airline industry. JetBlue and a company called Bliss have begun giving overnight passengers kits that include eye masks, earplugs, moisturizer, lip balm, and a promotional offer from the spa company. The kits are distributed only on flights between the western states and the east coast. So, And that was interesting, JetBlue. And...
Wow. I wonder if we're getting another sequel to that movie. Huh?
And this next one is... there we go. So three men accused are performing illegal castrations. This one's in Greenville, North Carolina. Three North Carolina men have been arrested on charges of performing castrations in Haywood County. None of the men are licensed to practice medicine, and investigators said at least six men from across the U.S. and parts of South America voluntarily went to the home to be castrated. What the hell? Why would you voluntarily go there to be castrated? Maybe Alexis Arquette's going to go there to get herself fixed on the surreal life. According to the information obtained...
Tell the little bastard. See what I care.
According to the information obtained from the Asheville Citizen Times, Richard Ciara, Danny Reeves, and Michael Mendez admitted to performing at least eight surgeries on six people. The three men were arrested at their home on Peace Mountain Road Thursday. Inside the home, investigators found surgical tools, DVDs, and equipment used to record the procedures. Oh, man, how'd you be watching that DVD? Disgusting. Each of the men are charged on five felony counts of maiming and castrating. And there are five felony counts of conspiracy and eight misdemeanor counts of practicing medicine and performing surgery without a license. Sick. Civilians in Iraq flee mixed areas as attacks shift. This is from the New York Times. This is from April Fool's Day. And, of course, we're fools for staying in Iraq. The war in Iraq has entered a bloodier phase, with the killings of Iraqi civilians rising tremendously in daily sectarian violence, while American casualties have steadily declined, spurring tens of thousands of Iraqis to flee from mixed Shiite and Sunni areas. The new pattern detailed in casualty and migration statistics from the last 6 months and in interviews with American commanders and Iraqi officials has led to further separation of Shiite and Sunni Arabs. About 900 Iraqi civilians died violently in March, up from 700 the month before.
Is that a fact?
According to military statistics and the Iraqi coalition casualty counts. So I guess they have so many people dying in Iraq, they have to have their own committee named at the Iraq Coalition Casualty Count. Iran calls tests of new missiles successful. They ran that story. They beat that story to death over the weekend about the Iran firing this missile. Supposed to be like one of the fastest missiles around. And it's also from New York Times. I found this interesting, that the America should be ashamed of Iraq. Iraq is becoming a country that America should be ashamed to support, let alone occupy. In its capital, thugs kidnap and torture innocent civilians with impunity, then murder them for their religious beliefs. The head of the Iraqi government is the ally of a radical anti-American cleric, al-Sadr, who leads a powerful private militia that is behind much of the sectarian terror. After 3 years of public policy blunders in Iraq, Washington may no longer have the political or military capital to prevail. Interesting. And this is from the censure hearing from Friday, which I was glued to that. John Dean, GOP Republican operative under Richard Nixon. John Dean backs bid to censure Bush. Former White House counsel John Dean said on Friday that U.S. President King George Bush's domestic spying program has raised more concerns about abuse of power than the Watergate scandal that toppled his boss, Richard Milhouse Nixon. Dean served time in prison for his role in Watergate. And they, jackasses on that panel, they blasted, I'm going to believe a felon. Oh, come on. Dean, who served time.
I've got a few questions for you.
Uh-oh.
Blow me.
He testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee on behalf of a seemingly futile Democratic bid to censure Bush for the eavesdropper program as part of his war on terrorism. Dean says, I appeared today because I believe, with good reason, that the situation is even more serious.
Oh, no.
Yes, whose testimony 3 decades ago helped lead to Nixon's resignation. The 1978 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, made spying on American citizens in the United States illegal without the approval of a special secret court. And as also, before we bring Chip on, this is from William F. Buckley, the arch-conservative of the National Review. He says that Bush will be judged on an Iraq war, now a failure. William F. Buckley, the longtime conservative writer and leader, said that George W. Bush's presidency will be judged entirely by the outcome of a war in Iraq that is now a failure. Mr. Bush is in the hands of a fortune that will be unremitting on the point of Iraq, Buckley said. Even if he invented the Bill of Rights, it wouldn't get him out of this jam. So, and then Howard Stern blasts his fans, saying they're cheap. We're not buying the Sirius radio to listen to him on the radio. He calls them, his listeners, you call them cheap bastards. I want to say to my audience, you haven't come with me yet? How dare you? We're up to wild, crazy stuff. The show's never sounded better. You cheap bastard. So, I don't know. Maybe people are just sick of Howard Stern. I don't know. So, I think with that, we'll bring on Chip Spear from PoliticalSports.com. There you go. And we are joined by Chip Spear of PoliticalSports.com. Chip, are you there, sir?
I am, Sean. How
Hi.
Are you?
Welcome back.
I haven't talked to you for a couple weeks.
Yes. How have you been? Yes, we're doing fine here. How are you doing?
Pretty well, thank you.
Yes.
Boy, we have had an amazingly busy week, I must
Absolutely.
Say.
Yes. Were you glued to your set for the censure hearing?
I've been watching the censure hearings, Tim Russert with John McCain on Sunday. The whole thing with Tom DeLay resigning. Man, we've got the assault on Christianity in America. All these changes going on in the White House, immigration, this whole Cynthia McKinney thing. And, God, I mean, you want to go, let's cross the border. We'll go overseas and go to France and see all of these protests. It's been a one busy, amazing political week.
Yeah, I mean, I was telling the listeners earlier that we had protests here in Vegas over the immigration business. And, you know, I mean, like I said, you know, there's some proposals they want to make everybody that's here illegally a felon and, you know, the guest worker program. I mean, our government can't handle a program like that. You got between 12 and 20 million people here illegally. I say it's half their fault because they came here illegally. It's half our politicians' fault because, you know, they didn't strengthen those borders and they want to be ridiculous. It's half an American people's fault because we took our mind off of it. We're too busy watching.
You know, it's pretty thing. You think in the political arena, you know, with all these various teams, you know, the U.S. government knew about this going on for 25 years, and there was an amnesty during the Reagan administration saying this is the one and only. They strengthened the laws and then didn't think.
Yeah.
And they allowed immigrants to come across the border by not funding and not adequately policing the borders. They allowed these big businesses to get away with this stuff for years.
Mm-hmm.
And then here are these poor people on the other side of the border who have some people, friends or relatives or whatever, that go across and say, hey, there's work, there's money. You know, and they essentially allowed it to happen. And now, you know, the right wing or the extreme right has said, we're going to throw them all out. They're all felons. They can't become, you know, American citizens. And
that's ridiculous.
How hypocritical can you get about that?
Well,
I mean, they allowed the whole situation to develop the way that it has. Here we have a homeland security issue. They haven't really secured the borders, and who knows who has gotten across those borders.
Yeah.
You know, and it's definitely an issue with big business who has been breaking the law, you know, for years, knowingly, and they've been pumping all this money into various political campaigns for people who will allow them to continue breaking the law.
Yeah.
And here they want to punish the people who have no political power. You know, it's typical American political dynamics.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm actually on your blog right now, which is politicalsports.com. Actually, your player of the week was John McCain from his appearance on Meet the Press, huh?
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of things going on last week, and then I was watching this thing with Tim Russert, and you know, it was like a 4-round boxing match.
Yeah.
You know, the first round, Tim comes out and tries to hit McCain with his Bush and his tax cuts.
Yeah.
The second round is this honorable campaign McCain thing in year 2000. And then the third round is like Falwell and his Agents of Intolerance and McCain going to speak at Liberty University. And then the fourth round is like the marriage amendment thing. And McCain is clearly looking at 2008.
Oh, yeah.
He's not interested in appealing to Democrats or even the wider voting public. What he's interested in right now is just appealing to the far right wing and the people that don't really trust him in the Republican Party because he's been such a maverick and occasionally going against the president.
Yeah.
So his thing with the tax cuts, now he's, though he came out, he was one of, I think, only two senators to vote against the tax cuts originally. He said that I will not vote for a tax increase, even though it was originally a temporary thing.
Yeah.
So he won't go along with it. And then with the 2000 campaign, when Tim Russert had asked him years ago, I think it was in 2003, he pulled out a clip from then and said, did George W. Bush run an honorable campaign? And at that time, said, I cannot say that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's amazing how that this guy's in a complete 180 on things. You know, now he's kissing up to the conservatives. And he did that whole thing at BS in where was it? Down in Memphis, where vote for my good friend George Bush, and you know, blah right. blah blah. You know, now and he's going to, you know, kiss Falwell's ass and all that. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, I hope the voters can see through him.
Well, you know, he's looking at just the Republicans. He's not looking at Democrats at this point, and he's doing a little bucking, you know, a little rope-a-dope, Muhammad Ali type of thing, you know, taking a few punches by Russert, but saying, look, you know, that's in the past. I've got to look to the future. Things are said in political campaigns that are hurtful, but we've got to get past that. You know, we're all Republicans. We're inclusive. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, he wants that nomination badly. Yeah. And he's going to do everything he can to make sure that he gets it so that every single word that's coming out of his mouth is targeting that nomination in 2008.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's sad seeing him because I actually respected him when he ran in 2000 where he stood up to Bush and everything. But, you know, I don't know about now. I mean, it's just plus, you know, he beat him up on him because of his age. But you know, if he gets in, he'll be older in his first term than Reagan was in his second term. You know,
yeah.
So
very true.
I hope everybody realizes that. I mean, I don't know. And then, actually, the question, chat room, what about the censure hearing? I guess we talk about. But, I was, you know, furious at Lindsey Graham and all of them beating up on poor John Dean, you know, and trying to question him about Nixon. I mean, you know, here's the guy that was, in, you know, Nixon's right hand man. Who is Lindsey Graham to question John Dean about Nixon? You know? Hello? Uh-oh. Your phone's. Hello?
Oh,
I think the NSA might have tapped into the phone line. You there?
Still there.
Oh, you're breaking up. Oh, may have to.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes.
And, I was going to say that with the censure hearings, it's a very interesting political dilemma for not only Republicans but Democrats. You know, Feinstein has definitely taken a position where he's pushing the line, you know, that he's trying to move the discussion more toward what it should be. You know, what did Bush do that was wrong?
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats are keeping their distance because they're looking at 2006. They don't want the Republicans to be able to get political capital out of Feinstein's desire for censure hearings because they think that it will be not advantageous to them.
Yeah.
The Republicans are going to say, hey, you know, they're attacking our president. They're attacking, you know, the impeachment. We don't have to go through that. It's bad for the country. We're in the middle of a war. So the Democrats don't really want these hearings. And despite what the Republicans might say, they want hearings because it's going to inflame the passions of their base in 2006.
True. Well, I thought it was amazing how Patrick Leahy actually turned around and joined Feingold in this, and he said, you know, you're right. you know, there's been you know, they went back. Feingold tried out the statements that Bush made during the election that how you know, the government's got to have a court order to wiretap your phones when he was defending the Patriot Act, and while, you know, even while he was saying that, the NSA was already tapping the phone lines to begin with. You know,
I don't think that there's any question that there are so many experts that say mm-hmm. that he definitely has crossed the line.
Mm-hmm.
There are people on the other side that say he hasn't, but it's very questionable, and that there's a lot of political stuff going on. But the bottom line is he did it.
Yeah.
So how do you use that as a politician to gain political advantage? The Democrats are looking at 2006. They want the House and they want the Senate,
mm-hmm.
and they say, "Look, if we keep our mouths shut about this, we might be able to gain the House and the Senate. If we bring it up as a huge issue, the Republicans are going to actually be able to use it against us.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't get the House, then we're never going to get those investigations that we so desperately want in order to really hammer Bush."
Yeah.
So it's short-term, long-term political gain.
Yeah. Did you watch, I don't know if you watched Hardball today or Asian Meet the Press said that General, was it Zini?
Yeah,
he was on, and that was an amazing, he's calling for Rumsfeld's resignation. I almost about ready to nominate him for the Democratic nomination for president. You know what I'm saying?
He's very impressive. I don't know if anybody has read or started to read the book Cobra 2,
mm-hmm.
but he plays a pretty prominent role early in that book, and I'm reading it now. Haven't gotten too far into it. I've mm-hmm. gotten through about 75, 80 pages, but it just is so clear that Rumsfeld came in there and just had this agenda and was not interested in listening to anybody that was an expert or knowledgeable about military operations. He just had this agenda, and he's going to implement it no matter what anybody said.
Yeah,
and Zinni was definitely against what Rumsfeld has tried to implement.
Yeah, I mean,
unsuccessfully.
Yeah, but, like we keep saying, waging a war like this, with a fraction of the force that was used in Desert Storm, I mean, it's ridiculous. And then, trying to win this war on the cheap, and Bush didn't even plan for the aftermath of the war. And it's been a bad week. I mean, and it kind of leaves Rice saying they made thousands of mistakes in Iraq, and then the next day she backed off it, saying she was kidding. It was a Freudian slip on her part, I think, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
And then,
absolutely. She definitely slipped up on that.
Yeah.
That. And as more information comes out about this, it's increasingly clear that they made some very, very serious lapses. They had some very serious lapses of judgment.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that the American people aren't more holding, Bush and the administration accountable for this mess. The trillions of dollars, we sent $1 trillion over there, and it's not done yet. And then all, 2,000 plus troops that we had, 9 that just died today or earlier when it was reported. Bush's approval rating is down at 37%. You think they'd be down into the 20s by now?
Well, yeah, you would think.
Yeah.
However, keep in mind, I think I mentioned a few weeks ago or a month ago or so, there was some information that was in the New York Times saying that 20% of the American public still believes that Saddam Hussein had direct connections with the 9/11 thing, and 13% of the American public does not know what a molecule is.
Oh, well.
I mean, there's just these statistics about the intelligence of the American public, when he's down at 37%, you say, well, you get those 20% who think that he had a direct connection, which was obviously not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Take those out, then you got 17% that are left.
Exactly.
And, you don't want to think that the American public is stupid, but there are definitely a sizable number of people that just don't connect with what's actually going on in the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're too busy with American Idol and all that to pay attention to what's going on. And also, you had a thing here about Senator George Allen, who I think he's the dark horse in this GOP 08 nomination business. He's starting to look a little more and more like Reagan. I saw him in something last week or 2 weeks ago, and he's got that little head shake going on for him like Reagan used to have. So I'm like, here we go. He's channeling Reagan. Senator George Allen's nomination of Lieutenant General William Boykin as Chief of U.S. Special Operations Command, huh? Now he,
yeah, there's nothing like trying to unify the country, isn't there? I mean, here this guy, you know, wants to nominate probably the most polarizing figure in the U.S. military to be head of operations for U.S. Special Operations Command. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is the most divisive person that he could possibly think of for this position.
Yeah.
But he does it anyway because it deals with the Christian fundamentalist extreme right wing of the Republican Party.
Hmm.
You know, that makes me think about what happened last week with the Georgia legislature that passed a resolution stating that the Bible was going to be classified as a textbook so it could be taught in the Georgia public schools.
Oh, but you're kidding. I missed that one. You're kidding me.
And then we would not have that separation of church-state thing that clearly is in the Constitution. Now, here is a legislative body of one of our 50 states, mm-hmm. and that the people who are elected as state representatives or senators clearly know that the intent of the founders of the Constitution is that there is a separation of church and state. And yet they clearly went against that intent with this resolution.
That's unbelievable. I mean, you turn the Bible into a textbook so they can teach it in school. I mean, why don't we just shred the damn Constitution? We might as well get it over with. Yeah.
Well, you know, these are the people that assume or they are assured that they are really the true Americans.
Oh, and then they're on God's side or God's on their side. I mean, well, what is this? I mean, I don't understand this. I mean, if it was the Democrats doing that, I mean, they'd be screaming holy hell, pardon the word. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, it's you know, they believe what they believe, and they're doing absolutely everything they can to advance their political agenda.
Amazing.
They don't really look at anything else other than the power politics issue.
You know,
how they're scoring points, how they're overcoming the opposition and destroying them in this political arena, so to speak.
Now, what about the changes in the White House? We had, of course, Andrew Card is stepping down, and Josh Bolton's taking over him. Now, the rumors were speculating on the TV today was Jon Snow, the Treasury Secretary, is going to get booted out by Bush. What do you think?
Well, and also Scott McClellan, you know, my particular take on this is that these guys are all part of the same team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Card has, you know, he obviously has been a part of the administration for a long time. He was not considered a major player.
Mm-hmm.
Bolton has been, involved very intimately with the White House for a long period of time. McClellan, you know, is, as a press secretary, he's the face, you know, that comes to the press. But mm-hmm. most people look at him as like stuck between a rock and a hard place with most of the things that have been going on.
Yeah.
You know, and as Treasury Secretary, you know, Jon Snow has been overseeing this huge budget deficit, you know, the economy kind of stumbling along. You know, some say it's doing okay, though there's still a growing discrepancy between the rich and the poor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and those things are all decided by the administrative team that's putting in these tax cuts, which is not Jon Snow. So these are minor players.
Yeah.
And they are not what the critics are actually looking for. You know, they're looking for a
Rumsfeld.
Really substantive change.
Yeah.
And those, there are really only two people involved in this equation besides Bush. One is Cheney, the other is Rove. Everybody else is inconsequential.
Well, Cheney's not going anywhere, but I mean, you think, you know, Rove would get the boot because the investigation's still hanging over his head. Or Rumsfeld's got to go. I mean, he's got to make some kind of nod that, you know, Bush never admitted he made a mistake, but maybe by getting rid of Rumsfeld, he'll kind of make the non-committal acknowledgement that there was a mistake. You know, mistakes were made in Iraq, and get rid of Rumsfeld. Yeah. You know?
Well, a great strategist or a great coach or player who was controlling the team would think the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's clear from the past 5.5 years that has not occurred. You know, it seems that Bush and Cheney and Rove are incapable of the type of reflection necessary to adapt and change in order to really improve their ratings in the polls.
Yeah.
You know, one could, you know, you could be wrong, but past history would suggest otherwise.
Yeah.
Nothing would suggest that they have that capability.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also, you want to talk about Cynthia McKinney. Boy, she's got herself in a whole lot of trouble, huh?
She sure has. You know, here, you know, and you could look at it and say, well, we've been talking about bad Republicans for such a long time, and here's a woman who's a Democrat who is really pushing the envelope. I mean, she has used racism as a political strategy here. You know, not only has she been involved in this problem with getting through, you know, security, but she was also accused of spending campaign finance money to bring Isaac Hayes down to Atlanta to dedicate some new office that she was opening. This, now, you know, they're definitely, you have to sort of preface this by saying that racism definitely exists in our country. And it still is a problem. But there are people that exploit the tag of racism for political opportunism.
Exactly. She's one of them.
A woman who was not, you know, she changed her hairstyle. There are 500 plus 35 members of the House and Senate, you know, and it could have been a new guard who was at the gate. She wasn't wearing a proper pin. She changed her hairstyle.
Exactly.
The guy supposedly called out her name or, you know, stopped three times. She didn't. He went up to grab her. She punched him.
Yeah.
And then she's blaming him and saying it's racial profiling. You know, I don't, I'm sure there are tapes, there are videotapes, there are audio tapes that will come out, you know, but she clearly seems to be somebody who is a little bit over the edge.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially I saw her in some show. She's wearing these earrings, look like something you see here in Vegas in a casino, you know, round, glittery, you know, what the hell? You don't dress like that. You're a congresswoman, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then that hair of hers looks like something that Marge Simpson would wear, you know, that crazy hairstyle of hers. I mean, what is going on? But you're right. You know, there's a handful of people that, you know, use race to, you know, to their own advantage. I mean, she's one of them. You know, oh, you know, they all get up there and barked how it's a, you know, I used to say that there's 500 something members. I'm sure you can't, you know, if it's a new cop or it's busy, they can't recognize every member of the House that walks by. And it's her responsibility to wear that damn pin. You know?
Well, it's just sort of human courtesy.
Yeah.
It's like the guy doesn't know. Okay, so, hey, you know, just say, hey, I'm, you know, Congresswoman, blah, blah, blah. Here's my ID badge. You know, but she acts in a very arrogant manner, and it doesn't really matter what party you are or what you think. If it's wrong, it's wrong. And she seems, from what I've read, to be clearly wrong, but she's using this race thing for her political advantage with her or her base,
I guess. Yeah, and actually, you have a story on your blog about a hot recruit for the Republicans, about Deborah Maggart from Hendersonville.
God, that was just so funny.
She still believes that homosexual couples should not be allowed to adopt children, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I don't know. If we're crying out loud, do you want all these kids that grow up in these, you know, orphanages or, you know, in these foster homes? I mean, if they, you know, if they have a loving, you know, family, who cares if they're gay or not, you know?
Well, that's so true, and one can always say that it's in an ideal world you would want things to be different than they are.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't live in an ideal world. And in situations like this where you have loving parents or you know, that want to do something positive for kids and have kids or adopt them or whatever, you know, they need that.
Mm-hmm.
And you could even branch that off and go into something even more controversial like abortion, you know, where people say there should be no abortion. And then I might say, sure, but I would bet that these are the same people that would never vote for a tax increase for the type of social programs and education programs to support those kids that are born because young men couldn't have an abortion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you want to ban all abortion, you better be prepared to see your taxes go up to take care of all these orphan kids.
Every person that votes against an abortion should say, okay, well, I will pay for one child for their entire life, including putting them through college.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, pay for college and pay for medical costs and whatever else.
For kids who get in trouble and go to jail or in prisons, they should put up or shut up.
Yeah.
If you're against this, then put your money where your mouth is. But they won't do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's much easier to just condemn it and go on with their lives and condemn other people.
Unbelievable. Actually, on your blog, politicalsports.com, you have a quote from Elliot Spitzer who said, of the Republicans, no party has ever done so much for so few who need so little.
Yes. There's another blog that I check out fairly regularly. It's run by a friend of mine called Bad Attitudes.
Ah.
And there are a number of people that write on that blog. The guy who started it was a former editor at the Washington Post. He has written a number of mystery novels. He worked for the State Department in Laos during the Vietnam War. He's a very interesting guy. He set up this website years ago. He still doesn't take any advertising, but he's got some very interesting guys on there, and one of them found this quote by Elliot Spitzer, heard it on C-SPAN today, and I thought it was so great that I had to put it on my website, and I just, referenced him. So
absolutely.
Anybody who's listening, periodically, go check out badattitudes.com. It's a great website.
Now, before we let you go, Chip, baseball season just started. Your crystal ball, who's going to the World Series?
Oh, man, I sure hope it's not the Yankees.
Nah. I'm from Chicago. You better say the White Sox.
I grew up in Cleveland, so I am forever, despite the fact that they never win, the Cleveland Indians, and I'm going to keep on rooting for the Indians, though,
Yeah, Tomey hit
those hope springs eternal.
Well, Jim Tomey hit a blast yesterday at Comiskey Park. Man, that was an enormous home run he hit. I mean, holy cow.
But, the Indians beat him today.
Yeah.
I don't know. The White Sox are pretty terrific. The Yankees really do look like they help themselves a great deal in the offseason.
Very cool.
I'm not as attuned to the National League at the moment. I haven't been following what's been going on in the offseason. But, I'm looking forward to it. Baseball's a great, great sport, and it's great to follow it all summer long.
Absolutely. Well, Chip, we'll let you go at the end of our segment with you. We'll check out on politicalsports.com. We thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you, Sean, and have a great week.
Thank you. You too. And thank you. That was Chip Spear of politicalsports.com, and we'll be back in a couple minutes with the second hour of Subject to Discussion with Trench. From thetrenchcoat.com, among other sites, with a crime discussion. And we'll be right back in a couple minutes. Stay tuned.
originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And we are back for the second hour of Subject to Discussion. Once again, I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want. Just do not call me a crime victim or do not call me late for dinner. And it's Tuesday night in Las Vegas, and it's Subject to Discussion time. And now we'll bring on Trench from thetrenchcoat.com, as well as newsofdoom.com and mycrimespace.com with our crime discussion. There you go. Trench, are you there, sir?
Doing? How you
doing? Love our mystery music theme there. There you go. That's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
That's Kojak.
Kojak. I'm sorry.
Oh, cool.
I couldn't remember who that was. You're showing your age, Centurion.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. But anyway, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
No problem. And actually, I was telling my listeners opening the program, but do you have a little bit of a history? Tell me about when you started with News of Doom, right? Yeah.
Actually, I started with thetrenchcoat.com, and how it started was I've had a website since 1997. I was one of one of the beginners.
Yeah.
And I was doing the HTML by hand on a web TV.
Wow.
That should tell you how hardcore I am.
Wow.
And I was just writing some stupid, goth poetry,
mm-hmm.
Some horror fiction, stuff like that. But, I was still using the Trenchcoat name
mm-hmm.
back then. When Columbine happened... since my site was all gothic looking and everything, the Washington Post inferred that my site had something to do with Columbine.
Ah.
And so ever since then, I've been, at first it was just to clear my own name, and then
yeah.
Second, it just devolved into, covering these school shootings and such for thetrenchcoat.com, and then it just offshooted from there doing various other crimes for News of Doom. And just recently, we have a couple of other crime bloggers and myself have a message board, and we give each other tips and to other stories, and I was posting all these stories about crimes that were happening through MySpace, and I just joked around saying, someone should start a blog about crimes that happened through MySpace. And then, the light bulb went off, and I said, maybe I should run that site.
Amazing, amazing. Now you started, it's called mycrimespace.com. Now, have you heard anything from MySpace about you starting this blog, or no?
No, not yet. I'm waiting for Tom's lawyers to knock on my door any day now.
Yeah, that's, Fox runs that now, right?
Yeah,
Murdoch.
Yeah, I guess I should say Rupert's lawyers.
Yeah, now, because I'm on the blog now, mycrimespace.com. Did you watch, I don't mean to go off of this MySpace business, but they had the hearing today, I don't know if you saw that, on C-SPAN, where that kid got up there and testified about he was doing a webcam business. He started when he was 13 years old.
I didn't see that.
They'll probably rerun it. It was Rita Cosby is talking about it today.
Was this the kid from Washington State?
I think so. I think I can't remember his name for the life of me now, but he was on Rita Cosby, and he said he got started, this webcam business, and some guy gave him money to, take off his pants and, yada, yada.
Yeah, I did actually read about this. Yeah, I was disgusted when I heard about this.
Yeah, yeah, and it turns out he has 1,200 men in a database that would pay him to do various things, and he met one of the guys, and I don't know, he ended up having sex. It turned out to be I guess his father is Mexican, so he went back down to Mexico to stay with his father, and his father ended up wanting to help him with his business.
With the business, yeah.
Yeah, his father got hookers for him to have sex with the kid on the live webcam. The kid was 13 years old.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can't believe some of the stuff that goes on.
Disgusting. Now, getting back to MySpace, how prevalent is this that these crimes are going on are connected to, most of these are sex crimes connected to MySpace?
Right. I don't know if it's becoming more prevalent because of MySpace, or if the media is just picking up on it and pointing the finger at MySpace being the new scapegoat, because I'm sure you remember that back in the late 90s it was AOL, in the early 2000s. It was Yahoo.
Yeah.
And I think I think MySpace is just the latest scapegoat. But there does, and I think, I don't know if it's just the media picking up on it more, and, you know, using the fear mongering tactics that media sometimes tends to do,
mm-hmm.
or if there actually is easier to facilitate crimes through MySpace. Could be six and one half dozen to the other, actually.
Yeah. Maybe it's because, well, the majority of the people on MySpace are young teenagers. You know, could that be like it's a concentration of young teens, whereas AOL and Yahoo would pretty much get a mix of, you know, everybody?
That could be, too. And also the fact that most parents aren't web savvy enough
mm-hmm.
to know what their kids are doing on MySpace.
Yeah.
And in the worst case scenario, sometimes they just don't care.
Yeah, that's horrible.
And teens sometimes aren't, and I hate to cast aspersions on a whole group of people, but sometimes teens aren't smart enough to stay safe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've said for a while that, you know, I think, you know, the computers for these kids has got to be in the living room, or the parents that keep an eye on where their kids are at on the internet. Take it out of their bedrooms and put it in the living room where they keep an eye on them, you know?
Exactly. I have two kids myself, and we always kept the computer out in the living room.
Exactly.
To make sure that you know, we knew what they were doing.
Absolutely. Now, because on the blog right now, you have an alleged Rhode Island MySpace rape. We know about that.
Not much. I just posted that today. And New England, for some reason, seems to be, these stories coming out of New England just seem to be a lot lately because, you know, we've had stories about Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts. The main concentration of the stories that I've been posting since I started this site seem to be coming out of New England for some reason. But this Rhode Island one, I don't know much about. And I just posted it today, and it seems like it's real sketchy because there's some conflicting stories in the witnesses' accounts. So I'm not 100% sure if an actual rape took place. If you were to press me on it, I would say that the police would have a hard time prosecuting this case with the evidence that's being reported in the media. Now, whether the police are holding back on information, which is entirely possible, I don't know. But according to what I've read, there was like this 17-year-old girl snuck out of the house and went with a couple friends of hers to go huff, what was it? I want to say the stuff to put in your tires. What's that stuff called?
Oh, the inflates it?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what they call it. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, because I have that in my trunk.
Exactly. And then one of the girls says that she was raped by one of the guys, and the friend is saying, yes, it did happen. Then she's saying, no, it didn't happen. And apparently the victim passed out from huffing, and it's just, it's like I said, it's conflicting. I'm not 100% sure that the guy who was arrested for this was guilty, and I'm pretty sure the police are thinking that too, since he only had a $300 bail.
Oh, yeah. Well, because on there it says the guy, I guess the alleged victim or perpetrator, Gilson, and the student allegedly began to engage in sexual activity in the parking lot. And the rape allegedly occurred while the Gilson's cousin drove the truck from the CVS parking lot to Eagle Lake. My God. So this happened in the truck while the other one was driving, huh?
Right, exactly.
It's ridiculous. And then you're saying there's a lot of these molestations are happening in Connecticut. And you said, what do you think the Attorney General of Connecticut should do? They think what MySpace should do.
Right. There was one of the first stories I posted was there was a rash of these going on in Connecticut. The first one, the two big ones were about these two guys. One's name is Sonny Seto from Jersey City, New Jersey. And the other one was Stephen Levitic from El Rama, Pennsylvania. Sonny Seto molested an 11-year-old girl in her playroom while her parents slept upstairs.
You're kidding me.
No, that's correct.
This is disgusting.
And Stephen Levitic molested a 14-year-old Connecticut girl while he was in his car. And the Connecticut Attorney General, his name is Richard Blumenthal, I believe, said that he thinks that MySpace should provide parents with monitoring software. Now, I don't know if he knows how monitoring software works, but, you know, personally, I don't think MySpace has a responsibility to, you know, give software to every parent for every kid who has a MySpace. That would, they'd be handing out millions of discs if they decided to do it that way. And it would be costing them, you know, more money than I'm sure they're willing to shell out for safety measures.
Well, if they want MySpace to, they better have AOL pan out some disc and Yahoo and all the rest of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I don't get that. So this guy molested an 11-year-old girl in her playroom while the parents were in the other room. So now the 11-year-old was on MySpace? Is that what it was?
Yeah, 11-year-old was on MySpace.
You're kidding me.
And MySpace is not supposed to have anybody under 16.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, you can lie about your age, I guess, but it's horrible. Now, did he molest the girl or did he rape her?
He did, in fact, molest the girl.
Oh, that's horrible. I mean, it's amazing how... Well, you see the press starting to pick up on this with MySpace. You know, you're starting to see it slowly and slowly, but it's so rampant, huh?
It just seems like all of a sudden it just burst out of nowhere. I don't know if it's because I'm paying more attention to it because of the blog or if it just within, like, March just kind of, like, blew up with these kind of stories.
Yeah. Now, what about, you have a case in Colorado that was facilitated through MySpace. What's that case about?
Right. What happened in Colorado is a girl, they don't ever give her age. So I'm going to assume she's under 18. She met a group of guys through MySpace. This was in Boulder, Colorado. And she invited them over. She only knew them through MySpace, didn't know their full names or anything. She had to actually pick them out from MySpace, using MySpace as like a photo array for suspects. And they basically vandalized the house. Stole, like, I want to say $30,000 worth of merchandise out of the house.
Wow.
The girl was raped.
Oh.
And as far as I know, one of the suspects is still at large, and I believe the other five or six are out on bail.
Unbelievable. How old was the girl again?
They never actually say in any of the news articles, but I'm going to assume that she's underage.
Wow. I mean, it's just... It's amazing. How do you cover these stories without getting depressed? Even just a handful you said already, I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah,
you
know? I know. I'm heavily medicated. That's
yeah.
No.
I thought the political news was bad enough. Now, you know, this is making them. I'm going to jump off the roof when I get it done with the show tonight. No.
just to go as an offshoot, one of the other crime bloggers, I forget who it was, she did a entry, and she's going to kill me for not mentioning her name. About how political bloggers and crime bloggers get the most hate mail.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I get tons, especially. It's doing the Columbine things.
Oh.
I get tons of hate mail because you'd be surprised how many kids out there look at the Columbine shooters as heroes. But that's a whole other topic for another time.
Well, especially now with you going after MySpace, I'm not surprised you get more hate mail because these kids love that MySpace. Even at work, in one of the hotels, we have an area where people come and use the internet, you know, and they all ask, do you have MySpace? I'm like, well, no, you know, I do have a MySpace thing for the program, but I mean, still, it's part of their lives, this MySpace. You know, they're always, you know, updating their profiles and everything, huh?
Right. I just got my first hate mail from my crime space today, as a matter of fact. And I did a story about a guy, and let me see if I can find that. Yeah, here it is. A 22-year-old man from Westford, Massachusetts, of course, is being charged with child rape after being caught performing sexual acts with a 15-year-old girl.
Oh.
And I did a follow-up to it because I have a great guy who gives me tips. I call him Mr. A. And he's got his own website, which is kind of along the lines of My Crime Space, but it's called The Dead Kids of MySpace. And if you go to My Crime Space, you can find it in the links section.
Okay.
And he gives me a lot of tips on finding the MySpace profiles of these people who are arrested for these charges. And we found this one by a guy named Timothy J. Dudix. Is that how I'm pronouncing it? Yes. And like I said, he's 22 years old, caught with a 15-year-old girl. And when Mr. A sent me his MySpace profile, every single friend on his MySpace was underage, just about. You could count on one hand how many there weren't.
Amazing.
When I cruised his MySpace, he had pictures, or you could tell he actually took pictures of one of his MySpace friends that was 19, and, you know, the usual MySpace risque photos that these girls are posting for some reason.
Huh.
And the youngest girl on there was 14 years old, was one of his MySpace friends.
Amazing.
It just disgusted me. And you're right. I don't know how I do it and not get depressed all the time.
Yeah, because I actually am on your Mr. A Reports number 2 from Friday saying how some Patrick Felon was arrested for propositioning a cop he thought was a 14-year-old girl. And he's supposed to go into the Marines or something. He's supposed to. I mean, it's amazing. And then also, MySpace has deleted 200,000 objectionable profiles. But
right. 200,000 out of, like, what, 26 million?
Yeah.
Personally, I don't think it has anything to do with safety or objectionable material. I think it has all to do with advertising. They're trying to get, you know, major advertisers like Ford and Coca-Cola or whatever, instead of having, you know, Punch the Monkey ads.
Huh. Amazing. And also you have a thing about teens being charged with child porn crimes.
That's right. I got the first story that broke was actually not a MySpace. It was a Zanga. I do kick Zanga when they're down sometimes, too. And a kid by the name of Ryan Zylstra, this was in Michigan, he posted pictures of friends of his having sex at a party, but the kids happened to be underage. So now he's looking at 20 years for child pornography, and he's only, I want to say, 17. So he's underage, so I guess they think, you know, since they're underage, it's not considered child porn for them. But that's, unfortunately, that's not how the law works. And, but the sad part about this is the girl who was in the picture was so distraught over it, she attempted suicide. So he should consider himself lucky that she didn't. She wasn't successful, because then he'd be looking at possible manslaughter charges.
Yeah. So he was underage, and he was taking pictures of girls his age and putting them up on MySpace. Is that right?
He was putting it on Zanga.
Oh, Zanga, actually. Sorry. Yeah, we weren't blaming him for everything. So that now, that's amazing, because he's underage. I guess it's a crime no matter what, how old you are, taking pictures.
Yeah, exactly. And now he's looking at 20 years because he thought he was being funny.
It's crazy. I mean, how this is on and on. And then what about this story about Joe Meredith?
Oh, right. This was mostly I did on thetrenchcoat.com because it started off about a week and a half ago. I just got this story out of Alabama saying that two teens were charged for plotting a Columbine-style attack on their school. And it was just a really small article, and I was just, at the time, I just commented, that's great, you know, two more punks off the street who would be willing to terrorize their school. And then I started getting a lot of feedback on just that one little blurb that I did. And so I decided to do more investigation into it, and it turns out that Joe Meredith, and he goes to, or went to, Gulf Shores High School. I found his MySpace, and he didn't look like your typical school shooting, you know, people who consider school shooters their heroes and stuff like that. I mean, the kid was smiling on it. He had Pokemon on his MySpace.
Wow.
Basically, what I think has happened is that he made a homemade slasher movie called Grizzly Underground. And I think, you know, being in a small town, I think small town mentality took over since he doesn't fit into their norms. And they thought, you know, that this was planning some kind of, you know, attack. And the prosecuting, the district attorney is saying, well, they have evidence that Joe Meredith was planning to kill one of his family members. There was a 15-year-old minor who they're considering Joe Meredith's partner, who they say took an overt action towards attacking the school. But usually in these cases, the prosecution and the police are gung-ho about releasing what evidence they have against these plots. Not so in this case. They're being very quiet about it. And a couple days ago, I got an email from someone who's very close to the situation, an adult. So it's not like I was overhearing this from someone who overheard two girls talking in chem class or anything about this. And it turns out that what they found on Joe Meredith's computer was a screenplay for a second movie he was making about a kid who kills his grandfather because his grandfather didn't buy him a car.
What the hell? Huh.
And according to the source that I have, this is what they're saying the police are taking as how Joe Meredith wanted to kill one of his family members. And how it all got started was Joe Meredith and his friend said they were going to release the movie on April the 20th. Kind of like how horror movies are always released on Friday the 13th or a Halloween night. They're just using that date as just kind of like a horror movie kind of thing, even though it was the date of Columbine and also Hitler's birthday and everything else that goes along with 420. And that's how they're assuming that this is a Columbine. Now, this kid's sitting in jail. The 15-year-old is sitting in juvie right now, all because these kids just wanted to make a movie.
Amazing.
And normally, like I said, I'm all over these kids who actually are actually plotting attacks against their schools. But in this case, I don't think that's the case. And it's very rare that I actually think this. And Joe actually, and the MySpace tie into it is that a bunch of his friends and family made up a free Joe Meredith MySpace, which you can find at myspace.com/free_Joe. And if you want to give your support, you can go there. And I think he's being railroaded just for the fact that he's growing up different in the small town.
Amazing. Actually, I'm over on your newsofdoom.com. I'm kind of perusing that. You have a story in there from New York about a Bronx mom killed in front of her kids. And that's particularly disgusting. It says three Bronx children watching horror as their mother's ex-boyfriend dragged her into her bedroom and closed the door. The next thing, the three kids, one youngest was 9, the oldest was 12, heard was her mother screaming in a chilling silence. The mother was stabbed, strangled, and beaten to death Thursday in the blood-splattered bedroom of her family's Bruckner apartment. And they cut her skull open, too, huh?
Yeah, this is just... I almost stopped doing this site over the weekend. I do a podcast on this site, a monthly podcast, and I tell what the top five... Because you can vote and how disgusted you are at these stories, basically. And I do a podcast to do the five... top or bottom stories, how you ever want to look at it. And after doing the podcast for the month of March, I was so disgusted at some of the stories I was talking about. I almost shut down the site altogether.
Yeah, it's horrible. Then you get the next one from Florida. A mom takes cash for son's abuse.
Yeah, that was actually a huge story in the crime blogging community.
Really? Now, how come we didn't hear about this on the cable news and all that? It says a mother confronted a neighbor who allegedly raped her 7-year-old son and threatened to call police, but reportedly accepted $600 to let the man molest her son again, Florida authorities said.
I don't know why it didn't make the mainstream. I mean, I did actually get this off of Fox News, if you want to call it
mainstream.
But I don't actually watch the TV news all that much. I usually get most of my news off the internet. But but the crime blogging community picked this up and ran with it. Because the stories I see about the way parents treat their children... On some of these stories I do is just horrifying.
Yeah, it's horrible. I've said it before in this program. I mean, I could take a little over the edge. I think you almost think you have to have a license to have kids. You know?
Don't even get me started on that.
Yeah.
Every idiot can. You need a license to own a dog, but any idiot can have a kid.
Yeah, and then some people shouldn't even be allowed to have kids. You know, if you got some kind of mental problem, don't even think about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Well, you know, just jokingly, on one of my podcasts, I suggested what they should do. As soon as you hit puberty, you get sterilized.
Yeah, well,
if you pass the test to have kids, we'll reverse the operation.
Yeah, I don't know. Or like I said before, maybe we're getting to the point in this country where we need like a triannual mental examination for every man, woman, and child in this country. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's some way to catch this stuff for their minds, get twisted. I'm from Chicago with Gacy. I believe they kept his brain, they took his brain because they want to examine what makes these people do this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? It's crazy. Then they have a story about this girl, a 3-year-old girl in California, asphyxiated in a murder-suicide attempt. Apparently, his mother lit a gas grill in their car.
Yeah, I did that story last week, as a matter of fact.
That's crazy. And asphyxiating her 3-year-old daughter.
What makes these people snap is just, but some people just, they don't even snap. They've just been like that all their life.
I don't know. I mean, what is it, a Subaru Outback? I guess it's like, how the hell are you going to light up a gas grill in your car? But I guess, it's amazing.
Yeah, see, but it doesn't take that much. It could have just been one of those, like, little hibachi grills.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. And then, you have one here about a pregnant woman killed by riding a motorcycle.
Yeah, and this is what I don't understand is why the mainstream media didn't pick this one up. And as a matter of fact, the guy I got the story from, a guy by the name of Don at Enormous Incongruities, he went off on the lack of, and he lives in the Houston area, which is where the story originated, and he was pissed at the fact that this story received little to no media attention at all. I mean, that's basically what us crime bloggers do, is we take the stories, let me rephrase that. A lot of us take the stories that... don't show up in the mass media and try and give them a spotlight so people know what's going on and if there's anything that can be done about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't understand why this one is on news. I mean, it gives all the ingredients to be on the cable news. You know, it's got the pregnant woman angle. You got the killing and all that. I mean, I don't understand
it. And the guy's still at large, too.
Yeah. I mean, what was it? Was it like a road rage thing that she was just riding a motorcycle?
Yeah, she was just riding a motorcycle. Next thing you know, she's shot in the head. And they have no clue who did it or what the motive was. I mean, I've heard theories that it might have been some kind of like random gang initiation.
Yeah. Horrible. And they have a man charged with killing a daughter, his daughter in Illinois. Apparently, this guy choked his 8-year-old daughter and stabbing her in the neck and attempted to drown her in the toilet. Well, boy, he couldn't kill her one way. He had to try two other ways of killing her?
No, exactly. And running this site is kind of like running the mob. Every time I want to try and shut it down.
Yeah.
for just depressing myself over these stories. It's like people just keep sending me these stories and keep telling me that I need to keep doing this because it's kind of like a cathartic for people so they can leave their comments and vent about these kind of crimes.
Yeah, it's horrible because this has happened in Illinois, and I'm familiar with this area, a very well-to-do area, by the way. The prosecutor stated at Lofquist, this is this jackass who tried to kill his daughter, attempted to strangle his daughter in her bedroom late Sunday while his wife was downstairs and his son was in bed. Then he moved the girl to the bathroom where he attempted to drown her and stabbed her in the neck. I mean, what the hell? I mean, was any follow-up this? Was there some kind of was he sexually abusing her to cause him to snap like that?
Actually, on News to Doom, I don't do a whole lot of follow-ups. There's only a couple stories that I actually follow, but I haven't heard any follow-ups to this one. But, actually where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, there's been a string of these kind of killings.
Unbelievable.
I mean, with fathers killing their daughters. And it's just... disturbing.
Yeah,
at the least.
You almost think it's got to be some kind of sexual perversion or something, or they feel some kind of.
In one of the cases in Charlotte, the guy was on. He was mixing his meds or something, and they're trying to use that as a defense that it was his. That he went off one antidepressant, went on another, and the guy was like well-to-do. He was a executive in the Wachovia Corporation, had a nice house, lived in a great part of town. And just like this story, and he just went off one day and killed his twin daughters.
It's amazing. It's disgusting. And he got this one story on there about these teens killing a man for mooning them.
Yes, actually, this was a cross-posted one because I did this both at News of Doom and at My Crime Space, where I posted their MySpace profiles. And yeah, these two kids were just like, I don't know if they were wannabe gangsters or if they were just starting out in a gang. But, their street cred was threatened, so I guess they felt they needed to shoot this guy just because he mooned them.
Yeah.
And this was in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, which is not too far from where I grew up, outside of Philadelphia.
Horrible. Horrible. Horrible stories. I mean, it just... give the listeners out there, you got anything coming up on the blogs now that you're going to post tonight or tomorrow?
Let me see what I'm going to post tonight. Let me go to my email here, because Google Mail is a blogger's best... Or not Google Mail, but Google News is a blogger's best friend. Let me get past the hate mail for a second.
Oh, I see a question from the chat room. Gray Coupon is asking, did they mention the MySpace page of the 18-year-old from Massachusetts who attacked people at the gay bar with an axe?
That's how the whole thing got started. I forget the guy's name, but I wasn't doing the site at that time.
I don't think they did. I remember hearing that.
Yeah,
I don't think they mentioned.
Actually, there's a guy who's basically the king of all crime bloggers, Steve Huff. He's at huffcrimeblog.com, and he did post the MySpace of the guy who did that. And I can't think of his name for the life of me off the top of my head.
But I don't remember because I remember watching that story unfold. Because what he shot them or something, then he came back out with the axe or something. Or I don't know whatever it was.
Then he went on. Then he fled and ended up shooting a cop and the girl that he was with.
Amazing, simply amazing,
And he was all into like Nazism and everything. And
yeah, it's a horrible. It was a horrible story. But I mean, so many of these are. Give the listeners out there an idea. If you're a parent out there with a kid who's 14, 15 years old. What would you say to them about the internet?
I would tell them to get a MySpace account themselves, because that's the only way you can look at other people's MySpace accounts is if you have an account yourself. And talk to your kids, especially talk to your kids, and let them know that there's bad people out there like this. Send them to my site and show them the horror stories of what's going on. And keep the computer in a public area if your kids are underage. And just make sure who they're talking to.
And there's that, and I always say keep the computer in the living room where you keep an eye on it, on your kids, where they're at,
Exactly. It's basically common sense. And unfortunately, in some of these cases, parents either are not showing common sense or just not caring, which is even worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad because you hear more, especially that kid today. I mean, if you get a chance, hopefully they'll rerun his testimony. Some of it they had to edit out because it was, on C-SPAN, it was pretty graphic for them. I think they only had a pay-per-view to buy the C-SPAN testimony. But, I mean, I admire the kid getting up there in front of the Congress and do that. I mean, it had to be a nightmare for him to relive all that. Because I remember him saying today, he goes, he made some like $100,000 or something off of this, You know, and then just to end up ruining his life, especially knowing his father helped keep the keep this thing going in perpetuity. You know,
right?
I mean, it's just amazing. Well, in the chapter saying, "Oh, we got to keep this in perspective. It's not MySpace's fault." No, we said that.
Yeah, yeah, right.
AOL's got problems.
But here's the thing, MySpace. I really don't think does a whole lot to discourage this, and they're very bad at enforcing their own terms of service.
Exactly. I mean, they don't do the TOS thing. And what if they make people? I don't know. They can charge for that. It probably dry up MySpace. They make people charge.
Well, not necessarily make them charge, but put in a credit card number.
Yeah.
I mean, just a credit card number. Don't charge anything to it. But if you know, this will be a safety measure for getting to make sure that parents know their kids are getting on MySpace, and it'll try and keep underage kids off of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Actually, somebody in the chat room was saying that they did some kind of expose on Gravity, the website Gravity, too.
So, not familiar with that one.
Near my, but I mean, it's all their problems. Yahoo took down all the chat rooms, the adult chat rooms, because they're getting complaints about molestations happening, things like that. AOL's always had problems, you know, and they've all got issues. You know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's the wave of things. I mean, you know, you got the telephone, now everything's moving over to the internet. I mean,
exactly. And then, you know, in another 20 years or whatever, when some new technology comes along, it'll come across that, too.
Yeah, but same thing with the, I work in one of the hotels in Vegas. We got problems with people running around in the bathrooms and stuff with these cell phones with the cameras taking pictures.
Cell phone cameras, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's an issue that's going to have to be dealt with, too, because you want these underage kids, you know, pictures, taking pictures of these kids on the toilet or whatever, and all of a sudden they're flashed all over the internet.
On MySpace.
Or anywhere, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. But anyway, Trench, we'll have to let you go at the end of our segment.
All right.
And we'll check you out at the trenchcoat.com as well as mycrimespace.com and newsofdoom.com.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you for being with us.
No, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye.
And there we go. What music is that from? I don't recognize that show. Which
it's
one?
It's supposed to be NYPD.
Okay.
Don't get that confused with NYPD Blues.
Oh, no, I know not NYPD Blues music.
Oh, here, we'll put what you wanted here. Oh,
there we go.
What's this, Emerald?
This
no.
is Beretta.
Oh. Don't go to bed with no price on your head. No, no. Don't do it. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. 70s
soul. Sammy Davis Jr. singing the theme song.
Who?
Sammy Davis Jr. And the guy with the one eye. The Candyman. Yeah, there you go. You can turn him down now. I'm sick of him already. But anyway, it's good to have him. I mean, we'll have to bring him back because it's interesting. You know, I mean, I hear about these crime statistics and all this stuff and all this crap that's going on the internet and everything. And, you know, it's nice to know. Some of these stories just sicken you. But, you know, it's life in America. I mean, we got to realize some of the stuff that's going on and somehow deal with it. It's our societal problems that we have to handle. And in just a minute or so, we'll be joined by Koenig Rules with our sci-fi Battlestar Galactica Doctor Who update. And first of all, we'll get some entertainment news before he calls in. Of course, American Idol had Barry Manilow on not too long ago. And apparently this week, The Gambler is going to be on. Kenny Rogers is going to be on Wednesday's show. So The Gambler will be there. And then they have an update from One Tree Hill. Another One Tree Hill hookup. Another perker working on a set of One Tree Hill. There's a good chance that Chad Michael Murray will propose to you. Murray, 24, is set to tie the knot for a second time with a cheerleading extra on his WB series One Tree Hill. 18-year-old Kenzie Dalton, People Magazine reports. It'll presumably be the first marriage for Dalton. Supposedly there might be rumors of a pregnancy, so we'll see. Of course, he was married to Sophia Bush, his co-star, and they divorced a few months later, blah, blah, blah. And then also John Stamos is coming to ER. Apparently his Jake in Progress, or whatever the hell it was, that's canceled. So they're going to bring him over to ER to help save that show. So we'll see what happens with that. And then we have the Doctor Who Sci-Fi Channel ratings. Of course, we know that Rose and The End of the World did a 1.6 rating. And the Unquiet Dead did a 1.3, and then also the Aliens on London did a 1.2 rating. So their ratings are slipping and a sliding there for Doctor Who. So, but hopefully the ratings will turn around. And I liked the episode. I liked it a lot. I mean, they had a lot of we'll wait for Koenig, but if I could delve too much into that, but I think your mic's on there. There you go. Anyway, but it's been a good program. So we'll have Koenig on in a minute or so. I thank Trench for being on. I got to make sure to call him Trench because we also have Trencher here on LV Rocks who does Spank Wagon. So this is Trench, and it was outstanding talking to him. I'll have to have him back. And I apologize for those from Blog Critics wanting to listen to a pop culture discussion, but I thought this was important because MySpace has been on the news a lot recently because of the all the crimes being linked to MySpace. So I thought it was good to get this out there so you get an idea of how, you know, the depth of this. Not just MySpace, but like AOL, Yahoo, all of them. But now MySpace is like the flavor of the month for the media to beat up on. So, you know, we'll see, you know, what can be done, if anything, to stop this. And then, of course, we had a good political discussion with Chip Spear of politicalsports.com. And we got to deal with this, you know, business in Iraq and all the we got things going on in this country, and we got to fix some of this stuff. Instead of, you know, worrying about Iraq, we got to take care of the problems here in the United States. So hopefully we'll do that. And so we'll see what happens with that. And actually, the episode will wait for Koenig because he's talking to the producer, so we'll see how long. And we had the it was getting back to Doctor Who. I didn't get the ratings for the week on the Nielsen ratings for the week at the top 10 shows. Apparently they're late again this week. But again, they did, supposedly according to the ratings chart here, they did a 1.2 was it? Yes, 1.2 from the most recent episode. So down from 1.6. And so I think we joined. I think Koenig is on the board there. So we'll talk to him once we give him his Mr. Koenig rules. Will be with us once we get the. There we go.
Dramatic entrance.
There you go. I see the TARDIS is in the distance. Oh, there's the comes the TARDIS. There we go. And exiting the TARDIS is Mr. Koenig Rules. Koenig, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Ah, thank you. Thank you for being on the program.
No problem.
Yes.
No problem.
How
Mr. Dalek.
How was the TARDIS today? Coming in on the TARDIS.
Oh, it was fine, but I didn't run into any Daleks.
No.
Not yet.
How about some Cylons? Didn't run into any Cylons?
Not till October, I guess.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe we could drum up a Cylon in this segment, huh? Why not? There you go. There are the Daleks. How about the Centurion? Can he speak?
There we go.
There we go. The first time.
Uh-oh,
the Daleks.
Uh-oh,
the Daleks and the Cylons are. Uh-oh, the Daleks and the Cylons aren't getting along here. So that was nice. I think it's the first time ever the Daleks and the Cylons have ever been on a show together.
Wouldn't that be great, a crossover?
Well, we just did it. What do you think? The ratings going through the roof here. That's a subject of discussion. Anyway, yeah, I said, I don't know if you heard the ratings. I got the ratings for Aliens on London. They did Yeah, they did a 1.2 rating.
And the week before, it was a 1.3 for The Unquiet Death?
Correct. And season premiere, okay. Series premiere did a 1.6. The ratings are slowly slipping. I think that's because there's nothing but reruns in front of them.
I think so. I don't know what's happening with sci-fi lately.
No.
As long as it's not doing better than Battlestar Galactica, I guess that's okay.
Yeah, I hope it's, you know, hangs in there.
Yeah, I'm hoping that at least sci-fi will pick up successive seasons of it. I mean, they are showing it a lot, Sean. I mean, you know, like Thursday nights, Sunday nights. I mean, I catch it a couple times each week.
Yeah,
so
they're beating the hell out of it.
They're showing it to death on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Maybe that's what's hurting it. People don't see the need to watch it on Friday when they can pick it up on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Something is obviously going on in terms of it's almost like the audience is halved that from last year. Remember when it was all 2.3s, 2.4s, 2.6s? So I don't know what is actually going on to reduce the numbers that drastically. I guess the only good thing is that it's across the board for what was that?
What was that? I don't know. That was a Dalek coming in to say hello to us. I don't know. But I think it was the George Bush and the NSA tapping the tapping the show here.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Now, actually, Invincible is saying that the rerun on Friday night got a 0.6 rating.
Yeah.
Now, actually, you're hosting a seminar next week, right?
We tried to get Aaron Douglas and to talk about his Flight of the Phoenix episode, but we have about 9 Battlestar Galactica panels, and it's going to be at Atlanta, Georgia, at the Marriott Hotel in Atlanta, and it's going to go from Wednesday afternoon all the way to Saturday evening.
Wow.
And there's about 9 Battlestar Galactica panels where we have about 2 or 3 presenters talking about everything from race and gender on Battlestar to the effects of 9-1-1. And we're also doing a special panel where we're showing the Lay Down Your Burdens Part 2 cliffhanger and then get reactions from the audience. So we're going to be showing the final episode.
Wow. You have to give my little program a little plug at your seminar.
Yeah, I will, because I'm also going to be revealing to people, because there's some presentations with the effect of the Internet and its influence on Galactica. I'm going to be mentioning my handle and stuff like that. So it would be interesting to see how many of those actually are familiar with Koenig rules.
Absolutely.
I'm
sure.
I will be plugging away for Sean O'Mac.
There you go. And subject to discussion, you know.
Yes, I know.
Oh, okay.
Subject to discussion, right.
But, I mean, well, it's good. I mean, because you know what? Because I don't know if you heard that last time we had Aaron Douglas on. He said he was in London. And
right.
he had people coming up to him. Oh, we listened to you on LV Rocks, you know, and all that. What the hell? You know, it's nice to know that people are actually, you know, going up to these stars and telling them. You know?
Right. But it's a good show, Sean. I wanted to ask you: Have you gotten any feelers out there in terms of like Doctor Who, in terms of your coverage of it each week?
I've gotten a few remarks from I was at Gallifrey One. Some of them listen to it and they like it.
Good.
But I haven't heard back from BBC yet, because I emailed them when I first saw the show,
right.
And I asked them, you know, to get some interviews. I said, well, we're still in production for season 2, but once that's over, get back with us. I think they got 1 or 2 more weeks left. But I know the new guy and Rose are on a PR tour in Britain for the new season. So
as far as I know too, they released it on some of the Who sites. That both of them are signed up for season 3.
Well, that's good. Now, what do you think of this recent episode?
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like the miniseries redone, you know, because I always thought it was a little bit hokey that these aliens and lizards resembled us, that they could look so much like us. And now, you know, it's sort of like these aliens and Doctor Who are squeezing themselves into these outfits, and yet they have to release gas.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
I thought it was funny. They kept all throughout the show. I thought, that's hilarious.
It is, because I wondered at first when I first saw it, what the heck is going on here, you know? And then all these guys, and if you notice, too, they were a little bit overweight.
Yeah.
As well, each of these aliens, which would explain, you know, a lot of their mass being shrunk, but... Yeah. It was good.
Yeah.
And did you see the reference to Bad Wolf?
Yeah.
The little kid spray painting the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Bad Wolf. So that's come back again. You know, it was in The Unquiet Dead, and now it's So they back again.
They slowly keep dropping that in.
Now
they opened it again. We explained a couple weeks ago how the TARDIS is now always right where it drops them, because now the doctor said, "Oh, it's only been 12 hours since you left." It ended up being a whole year. I mean,
a whole year, and then they think that the doctor is some type of pervert.
Yeah,
and I loved it when the mother slaps him. You know, in all the years that I've gone through time and space, I've never been slapped by someone's mom before. That was great.
And then the poor guy Mickey, the mother had probably had him tried and convicted of killing her
Mickey.
Daughter. Yeah.
Or as the doctor says, Ricky.
Ricky. And then what else? And then he ends up giving her a key to the TARDIS, huh?
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
And
it glows whenever the TARDIS is in the vicinity, too.
Well, that's amazing. You know, and then what else? And they went to 10 Downing Street, did the whole thing there with the MP wanting to talk.
Now that female figures in very dominantly in the second episode, plus without giving it away, she becomes a very significant player.
Really?
That's why they focus so much time on her.
Really? Mm-hmm. And then, because she's hiding in that closet.
And it reminded me, if you recall in V, the original series, Mike Donovan, the reporter, is on the spaceship, mm-hmm. and he's looking through the grill, and he sees these lizards actually eating the hamsters, and they show one taking the contact lenses out, and you see the reptile eyes. That reminded me exactly like with the human being looking at these aliens, and I figured they're doing a complete ripoff of V, but at the same time, much better, because V doesn't hold up a lot today. I mean, I've got up the whole series and miniseries on DVD, but this Doctor Who is just phenomenal. I mean, the effects. Did you see that spaceship crash into the Thames and hit Big Ben?
Yeah.
I mean, it was sort of like, wow.
Yeah, that was incredible, because, as soon as she said something, I don't know what word that Rose said, all of a sudden this ship, you know, flies over him and,
it was great.
Yeah, it reminded me of a Star Trek episode when they were on the Klingon Bird of Prey to crash into the water.
That's right. Yeah. The voyage home, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then Big Ben got wiped out. And then they showed that the Rose and the Doctor couldn't get close to the action, said to go back to her house and watch on the BBC. I thought that was it's kind of funny. You know?
That's right.
Yeah, but the whole feel of it was pretty good. I mean, they did the whole thing with her, you know, being gone for a year, and then the doctor's reaction. He takes off. Now, and he got the TARDIS actually to go into the hospital, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. I was like, "Well, has it done that before? Like, gone from outside into some room in an office?
Yeah.
Really?
It's really interesting. The TARDIS is temperamental. It can do short jumps really well, but it's the longer ones where it's thrown off.
Yeah. Well, we saw that with the episode a week before. It was off by a few years. You know, in Cardiff in 1869, where it was.
Right.
And then what else happened? Now I thought they left it with the cliffhanger with the
when it's like the 40-minute mark, you're realizing all these creatures are coming out of their human guises, and you're wondering how's the doctor going to be able to defeat these creatures in a matter of three and a half minutes.
Yeah,
and then you start realizing they're going to have a cliffhanger, and that was just like the old serials, because the old ones they would have every so often maybe a two-parter, but most were like four-parters or six-parters.
Wow.
So they would continue like for a month or 6 weeks. So that's why I like this one, this two-parter, because it would be exactly like one of the old Doctor Who's where, the story didn't resolve itself. It's continuing into the next week.
Yeah, well, they said that this episode, I didn't catch how or where, they made a nod to the original series. Somehow it made a nod towards the original show.
Right, and you know, there is the two-parter at the end, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's another two-parter at the end. I'm hoping they do either a couple two-parters or even three-parters for next season. I've seen on the BBC, they have a preview of what's going to be shown in season two. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
they got werewolves.
Really?
Oh yeah. They're going to have a couple
gothic
pieces, a couple pieces back where they travel into Earth's past. So
now, I remember
people liked Unquiet Dead, and that grew on me. I they'll be pleased. I think there's going to be two or three episodes in season two.
Now, I remember towards the end of the episode when they unveil themselves.
Yeah.
And they're all this flat blubber.
Yeah.
Right.
I was trying to find the movie that, because I was like, I've seen those, like,
yeah, those creatures.
Similar to, the movie was, it was a 1991 movie. It's called Nothing But Trouble.
Oh, really?
Do you remember that? It had a pretty good cast. Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase,
really?
John Candy, Demi Moore. Do you remember that movie?
He's done his research.
Yeah, absolutely. we got expensive staff here at Lovely Rocks.
Well, what it is, you know, they get caught by the police, and they basically take them to the house where the judge is at, and the judge is played by Dan Aykroyd, and they say, you know, they eat dinner there. It's a kind of a weird, goofy movie, but, you know, and they won't let them leave.
Really?
And basically what they do is they try to kill. But it's kind of like a goofy. It's not like a scary movie or nothing.
Right.
And basically the house is behind like this whole like just like a junkyard.
Huh.
There's these two flabby guys in these suits. One's played by Dan Aykroyd, and I don't remember who the other guy's played by. And they're no.
Dead man.
But they wear these suits that resemble what they turn into. They're these big fat blobbery looking, not even human looking things.
Really? Yeah, they look weird. And then the one that was poised to kill poor Jackie, it looked like it had claws or something, huh? And then the one zapped.
The mom always looks like she's getting it. from the mannequins and now from these creatures.
And then the one was zapping the poor doctor, right?
Right.
And then Rose was in that room, and then that one was about ready to attack them. Now, what did the doctor get hit with? Like a laser or something? What was the doctor getting blasted with?
Well, they have those things. They were given those badges.
Yeah.
And those are the things that the electrical charge is going through.
But
the doctor is able to explain at the beginning of the next one why he's not affected. So you're just going to have to
wait. Because he's a Time Lord. And then also they mentioned UNIT in this episode as well.
Yeah, that was nice.
And they all knew.
It would have been nice to have Lethbridge Stewart, who starred in the second Doctor's run and into the fourth and the fifth Doctor. It would have been nice if they brought him back, but, you know.
Yeah.
And they might do that with Torchwood, maybe.
Really? And then they...
Yeah, because I think What's-His-Name is supposed to be working with the unit.
Really? And then they mentioned the... somehow the British intelligence seemed to know all about the Doctor, huh?
Yep. Yep. Huh. Yep, they brought all the brightest people there in the one room that had any dealings with aliens to wipe them out. So, the doctor's been monitored by people in government.
I guess
as
so.
Well as by aliens.
And then according to Invincor, there's two more two-parters and a total of three for this year. And they're doing three two-parters in the coming season as well. Wow.
So there's two more two-parters.
That's what he's saying, or she, whoever that is.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh God, how could I forget? There's another alien two-parter too.
Uh oh.
Yeah, that's real good because it's sort of a period piece.
Yeah, then you got three.
That, like around World War II. I forgot where they introduce Captain Jack.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, that is that. How could I have forgotten that? Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And then the Doctor
Dalek.
Daleks
in,
are coming.
In two weeks.
2 weeks, and
yep.
then the doctor used to work for the unit, so they
that's
they,
right.
So they're
second doctor on to I think the fifth doctor is when so it's got so much history to it, but you know I mean it you don't care you know because for new people you don't have to know all that history, but it's got just the right nods.
Yeah, so. It's an outstanding series. I mean, I enjoy
it.
I just wish I could get some of the cast members on. You know, I mean, I hope the BBC will be a little more. Hopefully, there'll be more forthcoming in sci-fi. I understand because you know Ron Moore was on something. He was interviewed on some Galactica station. What the hell? Why come I can't get him to come on this show? You know,
probably because we revealed too many spoilers.
Oh, for crying out loud!
I bet you anything. He's trying to figure out who Koenig Rose is. Because damn it, he's telling people about you know, Elosha dying.
Oh,
and,
Jesus.
You know, I mean, he's telling all these people that. No wonder people aren't tuning in because Koenig Gruz is ruining it for everyone.
I mean, it's the stuff that's out there. You just get it, you know.
I know.
You know. And then...
Well, I know.
I know. Honestly, you know, one guy on this board is the worst. He gave away every scene in the season finale.
I'm trying to think of his name, but he gave away the whole plot.
Yeah.
To lay down your burdens, part two, and he hasn't really been seen too much on the sci-fi boards. Mirjonivian, I forget his name, but he must have gotten into way loads. Trouble,
yeah,
so.
Actually, Invincor is saying that they really doubt that BBC will give me any interviews. BBC said, Invincor says the BBC normally releases the cast members to